You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenzi. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network as the countdown is nearly complete. We are now just a couple hours away from kickoff. The Denver Broncos getting 3 points on their home field against the same Carolina Panther team that they beat in the Super Bowl. We're breaking it down from every possible angle. Warren Sharp, sharpfootballanalysis.com, literally and figuratively one of the sharpest dudes in America. This guy's a numbers guru. He's been beating the book for years. He's been joining me for years. Warren Sharp joins us on this kickoff Thursday night. We send it to Las Vegas, Nevada. Teddy Covers steps up and in and joins us straight from the strip in Las Vegas, Nevada. We'll get Teddy's feel for this football game, Teddy's feel for week one, and maybe a couple of college football picks as well. But we're focusing in on the National Football League this evening. Jin Sands will join us. Number fire. We're busting down the numbers DFS style for you this evening. You know, and I've got a feeling that tonight's football game is going to be a little bit more higher scoring and entertaining than some people are thinking. I'm looking at some of the props for tonight's game. I'm seeing the same props for Trevor Siemian that I did for DeAndre Francois, you know, a high school quarterback. You know, it was like 15 and a half completions, 199 yards. You know, kid threw for 429 yards. You think Trevor Siemian's playing in the National Football League if he can't play? Well, I should take that back. Tim Tebow played in the NFL, and nice to see the Mets have found their savior in Tim Tebow, but that's besides the point, right? We're not talking about Tim Tebow. We're talking about real quarterbacks. Trevor Siemian's going to do just fine. All right, so we've got you covered from all aspects. DFS, we got you covered. You like to bet props? I got props. You want to bet a teaser? I got a teaser. You like a side? I got a side. I'll give you a money line. I got a total. We got it all on the program, and we're going to give you some early opinions for the couple of other NFL games on the board as well. Now, I've noticed since we've been doing these intro rages, people really enjoy them. I like them because I get to just, you know, yell, basically. And, you know, I enjoy yelling. And there's a lot of stuff that really angers me in the sports world. So it's a good platform. But I also know anytime that I go any sort of route political or about the flag and about Kaepernick, I get ripped. Well, I get ripped every day anyways on YouTube. But I mean, I get ripped more. I get ripped more whenever we go political. And, you know, I'm even all politicized out, man. There's only so many times I can tell you that Hillary Clinton's a liar, right? I'm all politicized out. What can I do now? There's nothing more to say. There's nothing more to say right now. The season's upon us. I just want to bet. I want to play some DFS. I want to make money. But it would be remiss of me not to bring up the fact, because this might have an impact on a point spread. Maybe. I don't know. But, of course, Colin Kaepernick started the firestorm when he refused to salute the flag in the national anthem. Sort of compromised and went with the kneel. And now Colin Kaepernick, one of the hottest selling jerseys in the National Football League, the dude's trending upwards. He's giving the money from the jersey sales that he's making to inner city community groups. Like, Colin Kaepernick's just pushing all the right buttons, at least to a lot of people on the left. People on the right, not so happy about this. And people on the right could be a hell of a lot more unhappy when they find out that the Seattle Seahawks are plotting a team-wide protest. They're going to raise it up a notch in support of Colin Kaepernick, in which word out of Seattle is nobody on the team is going to stand. They're all going to kneel, including potentially head coach Pete Carroll. Yet, I've got to wonder if Russell Wilson wants to do this. Mr. Corporate America, Russell Wilson. Now, you remember, and, you know, I don't like going down this road, but if you remember, you know, we heard rumors of friction in that room that Russell Wilson, you know, was a little bit too different than everybody else. It was just about the money, didn't hang around with the brothers on the team enough. You know, really wasn't one of them, so to speak. But they won. And we saw it, man. It was Marshawn. And, you know, Marshawn is one of the boys. And then you got Russell, who's not. I'm sure right now Russell Wilson's on the phone with his agent going, "Dear God, man, I got like Microsoft deals and stuff. What the hell am I going to do?" Well, if you don't do it, you know, suddenly you got a big problem. Now, most coaches and most teams, this would be a major problem. But Pete Carroll isn't most coaches, and the Seahawks aren't most teams. You know, you think Richard Sherman's going to be a part of this? Yeah, I do. Now, for the record, Doug Baldwin's the ringleader. So, you know, it's not just scrubs right now, man. We got Doug Baldwin in on this. Bobby Wagner's in on it. Cliff Avril is in on it. And Richard Sherman has said he's not in on it yet. I'm intrigued by this. Now, Pete Carroll. Now, listen, there are a lot of coaches over there dead body. You think Mike Ditka would be part of something like this? You know, he'd be knocking players out of the locker room. But Pete Carroll's a different dude. The guy's a 9-1-1 truther, man. He's a 9-11 truther. You know, after the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, you know, the next year in camp, they brought in a 5-star general that was, like, fighting the war against terror. And they were like, he was a big Seahawk fan. Pete Carroll's like, yeah, nice to meet you. What really happened on 9-11? And, you know, they tried to awkwardly, you know, change the subject. Carroll went right back to it. Yeah, I watched that BYU professor that said it's impossible for the structure to collapse like this. Pete Carroll's an edgy dude, all right? So Pete Carroll's not going to have a problem with this. Vince Lombardi would. Remember the good old days? Remember the good old days when you're betting on football and you were a football coach, you only had to worry about the other team's blitz package? Now it's like, God, dear God, man. These guys going to beat up a chick in a hotel room the night before the game, and even if they don't, they're going to show up to the game, and then they're going to disrespect the flag on the anniversary of September the 11th. Now, I said earlier in the week, the NFL can deal with Kaepernick, and they don't even mind right now. They're getting publicity. They're making money off the jersey sales, and they look like they're standing for freedom of speech. But Roger Goodell is going to have a freaking heart attack, man. All right, forget Deflategate. Forget Bountygate. He's, you know, Anthemgate's going to be a real problem for the NFL if the Seattle Seahawks and what they're doing starts to, you know, trigger around the National Football League, because it will. Other locker rooms going to start going, hey, we can't let these guys do this on their own. We got to do this now. And I'm thinking of my Buffalo Bills. I know a lot of Buffalo Bill players want to do this. You know, you think Richie Incognito's going to be down with this? I got to tell you, man, you know, Sunday can't get here soon enough. I don't know what the hell's going to happen, but it's going to be damn interesting. All right, let's talk some picks. Let's talk some DFS. Let's make you and me some money. God knows we all need it. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. Thanks, Jake Seeley. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenz here. We are live, and the countdown continues. We've got the Carolina Panthers and the Denver Broncos. I told you guys many times, you all know, I went down in flames with the Carolina Panthers. I had this game circled all season long, all offseason, just like the Carolina Panthers have. And, of course, now that the game is here, I love the Denver Broncos. So let's bring in Teddy Covers, straight from the Strip in Las Vegas, Nevada, to begin our breakdown of the 2016 NFL regular season. What's going on, Teddy?
What's there, some kind of game tonight or something?
Yeah, I heard. Yeah, well, you know what? I'm disappointed. I thought Louisville and Syracuse was tonight.
No, that's tomorrow.
I know. I'm like, son of a bitch, they moved it for the NFL.
The NFL rules. Even baseball's got a light card, you know?
Yeah,
No one wants to go up against the NFL, not on opening night. There's going to be a lot of eyeballs on the TVs.
Yeah. Huge game. You know, though, Teddy, it's cool, but it's still not Christmas Day. You know, you get a little bone thrown your way one game, but I don't know. You're a pretty disciplined guy. You know, do you like this game? Do you like this game from a betting standpoint, or more so from a fan standpoint?
Nah. You know, a Sunday is the day where your juices get flowing, you know?
Yeah.
When all those kickoffs are, you know, you got your TV set up and you're just, the crowds are roaring and kicking off here and kicking off there. That's, to me, is the real juice factor, as opposed to the Thursday night kickoff, where, there's just one game, you know? But I'm excited to see the matchup. I'm interested to see the matchup. But in terms of what's in my pocket, nothing.
Yeah,
I don't have a bet on this game.
It's an interesting game that really could go either way. And the fact with Trevor Siemian makes it a new unknown, Teddy. But one thing, you know, if you like something, and I read one of your pieces that you wrote recently in which you changed your opinion of some teams after watching them in the preseason. But if you, you know, and there were a couple of games that I liked in the offseason, but now as they get closer, I don't. We'll find out if I was smart or I was scared. But it's okay to change your mind in the betting world, isn't it? I think a lot of us sort of get locked in. I hate it because sometimes I give stuff on TV, Teddy, on like a Friday night, and then by Sunday I'm like, wow, this is changing. This is tough. and I find myself getting locked into stuff, but not just, I know everybody does it, in which they see something, they like it, and even if there's evidence to maybe, you know, make a strong argument for the other game, they still get locked into it. You were writing about how it's okay to change your mind, and you have to change your mind. I remember when Ross Perot ran for president years ago, I remember a line he said when they're asking about a flip-flop that he did. He said, only dead and dumb people don't change their minds.
And that's the truth of it. It's so silly, the concept of, oh, I like this team, or I said something positive about them, and now here we are approaching kickoff, and the conditions are different, and the information is different, and the point spread is different, and yet I'm locked into this opinion? No, I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, things change, and the best handicappers, the guys that make the most money at doing this, are willing to accept the fact that things change, that there is variance, that an opinion about a team is a fluid process as it relates to how the market is viewing that team and to how the situation sets up for that team in any given week. So, we're not politicians. Okay, and God willing, we'll never be politicians, Gabe. That gives us the freedom and the flexibility to adapt as circumstances present themselves. Yeah, you got to change. You have to. And I'm not talking about if you see a team play good one week, you're like, wow, that team's great.
Exactly.
That's a classic overreaction. But over a course of a period of time, when you're finding out new information about teams and you're gauging the market's reactions to those teams, and when both of those factors aren't working in confluence with one another, that's where you really have to be cognizant of and very willing to change your initial thought process.
And classic example of this is people are like, well, Morency, you love the Panthers in the Super Bowl. You must love them here, right? You're on the Panthers. Yet I look at this and I see this game as a toss-up. It wouldn't shock me if it went either way. But with that being stated, you know, the fact of the matter is it's extremely rare, and I don't think it's ever happened before, to be honest, because it's only the seventh time that we've had a Super Bowl rematch in week one, Teddy, and the Super Bowl winner is 4-2 straight up. We're getting a Super Bowl champion on their home field, 24-3 straight up, last 27 at Mile High. And you and I have been around a while, and I remember the old days, Teddy, in the 80s and the 90s, we used to bet against the team that won the Super Bowl in week one because they'd be overvalued. But the fact is, since the year 2000, man, Super Bowl champs are 14-2 in their season openers, Teddy.
Yeah, the Super Bowl champs didn't lose Peyton Manning every year and replaced him with Trevor Siemian. You know, and they didn't play the team that they just beat in the Super Bowl on opening day. So, I mean, trend all you want on this. Look, I'm looking right now at several different mainstream sets of power ratings. All right, I'm seeing Seattle and Arizona and Green Bay and Pittsburgh and New England, all as the top teams. I'm not seeing Carolina ranked number one anywhere. All right, my rankings of Carolina as the number one team in the NFL, period. All right, I think they're better. Certainly offensively, they're better than they were last year. And last year they were the highest scoring team in the league, mind you. I'm not sold on this decline. All right, they went 15-1 last year. Yeah, they were plus 21 in turnovers, by far best in the league. Yeah. I understand all that. I'm not asking for 15-1. But I'm saying from a power rating perspective, I think Carolina is an undervalued commodity. But the markets did too, and that's why they bet the you-know-what out of this game. You know, I mean, Denver was chalk at the open over the summer, and they bet it up to 3. And I thought maybe you'd get down to 2.5 on game day, and I'd take another shot with Carolina, but I don't think it's going to get there. And you say, well, the Broncos only gained 194 yards in the Super Bowl, and they were one of 13 on third downs. Who cares if it's Manning versus Siemian? But you know what? There's an intangible there. Peyton Manning commanded a huddle in a way that Trevor Siemian did not. And in the fourth quarter, if Denver's down by 4, I think the team reacts differently. And maybe I see something that I didn't see out of Siemian in the preseason. But I'm not counting on it. It'd be Carolina or nothing for me. I don't want the Broncos.
And, you know, the Trevor Siemian really is the X factor here, because as someone who's watched as much college football as I do, Teddy, I don't really have much memory of this kid in college either.
No, it's not someone that we watched in college and said, oh, yeah, you know, it wasn't Jared Goff, let's put it that way. You know, we watched him all year and said, wow, you know, this guy might do something. It wasn't even, you know, Brandon Doherty or something, you know.
No, look at
this kid chucking it around. Maybe he'll do something in preseason for me. You know, Siemian was like, okay, I think he was 7-7 as a starter at Northwestern. But, you know, I mean, that's largely irrelevant. The question is, what's his skill set? And, you know, all the reports out of Denver is, you know, Kubiak's like, yeah, well, he's commanding the huddle well. So, you know, we'll see what that means.
All right, Teddy, so let's blast through some other games. The Vikings and the Titans, speaking of quarterback situations, you know, the Vikings, you want to talk about a better football team. You're talking about Carolina and your power rankings. Well, the Minnesota Vikings, last year, one of the most underrated football teams in the National Football League by the betting public on a weekly basis. Here we have the Vikings. It's 2.5. What's your take on this game and the Viking quarterback situation right now?
Well, you remember last year, the reason that Minnesota was so good to your pockets, what did they do opening day? You're going to remember this game.
Yeah,
Jake, don't
that's
you?
Why I want to take – I like the Niners on Monday, to be honest with you, Teddy, but I want to get ahead. I like the Niners better than I like the Titans in this spot. You know what I'm saying? But go on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Minnesota came out of the gates flat as a pancake last year. They didn't get the job done on Monday Night Football. And they've talked about it a little bit in terms of something that they were embarrassed about of being not ready to go last year. The quarterback, I think Sean Hill's going to go. And I don't that hasn't been announced yet, but I would be very surprised, based on the quotes that I was reading earlier in the week from Bradford, from Norv Turner, it seemed to me like Hill's probably the better option week one. And frankly, if they win, I think they should keep Hill until they lose. You know, give Bradford time to learn that offense, because from all of his quotes, he's like, I don't know it. I'm not ready yet. And Hill would be fine. Hill was going to be fine for a game or two or three. He just wasn't. No one expected him to last all 16 games, and that's, you know, was why an excellent reason to bring in Bradford. But we talk about this Vikings coaching staff. I mean, we got a staff with Zimmer, who we love. He's got three former head coaches on staff. They got of their position coaches. These guys are all grizzled veterans. If there's one staff in the NFL that knows how to handle this situation, it's Minnesota staff, a coaching staff that I really respect. And Tennessee was a good-looking team in the preseason. A lot of people high on the Titans. They came out last year. Remember what they did in Week 1, Morency?
Yeah, they put up like 114 points, didn't they?
Yeah, Mariota had four touchdowns. They killed Tampa, and then the next week they went and lost to Cleveland. And they covered, I think, two or three spreads the rest of the year after that.
Exactly.
So another really misleading Week 1 result.
And you know what it is with this game, Teddy?
Vikings are nothing for me.
Yeah, Vikings are nothing for me, I agree. But the thing with me is, Tennessee does look good. Mariota can come out and be a star on a Sunday afternoon in week one. And they do have a punishing ground game now, but that almost plays into the Vikings' strength. The Vikings are good against the run.
Bingo. That's the point there, is that Tennessee looked great running that ground and pound in the preseason, the smash mouth in the preseason. You know why? Because nobody runs it and nobody game plans for it. So it works great in August. They were bet on all August. It's September now. Minnesota's defense is absolutely built to handle that kind of attack. Like I said, Vikings are nothing. I don't want the home dog.
All right, here's a team that can't stop the run, but I'm intrigued by their offense. Their offensive line's going to be better. They bring in Travis Benjamin. You've got one of the best possession guys, and guy's going to get open, you know, in Keenan Allen. You still have Antonio Gates, Phillip Rivers, for all the criticism. Can still throw the ball down the field. I really like the, you got Woodhead. I think Gordon's going to be much better this year. He looked good in the preseason. But I think Benjamin really helps them stretch that offense and gives Rivers a deep threat that he hasn't really had since the Vincent Jackson days. They've had a lot of slashers and cutters and stuff, but they haven't had a guy that, you know what, we're going to throw it deep to. And Benjamin seems to, you know, be that guy right now. They can't stop the run. They shored that up in the second half, or let's say the last, you know, 5-6 weeks of the season, Teddy, last year. And then I watch the Chargers in the preseason, their starters, and they're like ghosts out there, man. You know, their backup running backs are gashing them right up the middle. But with all that being stated, I think this number's a little high here. What's your take on the Charger Chiefs?
You know, I like San Diego's offense. I do not like their defense. And especially being a Bosa's not going to be ready. They have no pass rush. You know, so Alex Smith's going to have time back in the pocket. When Smith has time, he's really effective. One would think, at least that's my handicap. And the other part of the process here is, what does Kansas City have to do to get some respect? You know, that's another team, like Carolina. Just overlooked. You know, they're not sexy. Nobody. If Alex Smith had a cool nickname, everyone would be talking about how cool he is right now. But his name's Alex Smith. And nobody, he plays in Kansas City. And Andy Reid, and nobody's excited about Andy Reid. And this Chiefs team, it's, you know, Well, they win 11 in a row to close out, 10 in a row. Yeah, they won a playoff game too before they went to New England, right?
Yeah, they beat Texas. They went into Houston, yeah.
So 10 in a row to close out the regular season, then a playoff game, and then they, you know, they gave the Patriots a game, a better game than I thought they would, to be honest. KC's good, and they're not a team I'm looking to step in front of. There are other teams I'd rather bet against in the NFL than the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, this is a game that I've had on my short list, and it still is, Teddy, but there's something about it that I'm a little bit concerned. All right, we've got a couple of minutes. We'll blast through them, and I want to get to your free pick over at Covers Experts, the college pick. Here's a game, Teddy. I liked it better at 4, Bears-Texans. I'm looking to pass on this now.
Yeah, it's a clear pass for me. Chicago was one of the teams that I was writing about that I had to change my opinion on in the preseason, because the Bears had such a bad preseason. You know, their schedule looked easy. There was a lot to like about Chicago. Everyone talks about how John Fox in his second year, his teams explode, yada, yada. And then you watch them in August, and their offensive line's crushed, and they got 24 guys missing practice because of injury, and the defense can't get in right, and et cetera, et cetera. I don't trust Chicago, but Houston's, you know, I'm not in any rush to lay points for the Texans right now. So it's now that it's been bet back up to close to a touchdown, it's a clear pass for me.
You and I, quickly on this one, Teddy, we'll close with college. You and I talked about the Lions a couple of weeks ago. It was a nice spot at 5.5. Looks like you moved the number. And I told too many people I like the Lions because it's 3.5 now.
Yeah, the markets are paying attention. You know, Indy's in a world of hurt.
Yeah, the Buffalo Bills, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, all games that are getting 3 points that I think are nice teaser spots, Teddy, getting up to 10 points. Give me the Lions plus 10, maybe tease to the over, or Lions plus 10 with the Bills plus 10. In closing, SMU and Baylor, some college football. And I agree with your write-up in this game, Teddy, and I told people this. I said, listen, Baylor might have a bunch of punk-ass sexual assaulters and dog beaters on their team, but they also still have a lot of talent from last year. Like, a lot of recruits dropped out, but no one really left. And they're freaking loaded still. Their offense is still loaded. They hung 55 up, and then they just gave up and stopped caring last week. And as you wrote, SMU with Chad Morris here, starting to develop a little bit of talent. Point spread's 32, total 76. You like a track meet.
Yeah. I would expect we're going to see offense here. You know, Baylor's fast. SMU wants to fight them, though. SMU's going to try to play at their pace, at their place. And that makes me a little bit reluctant to take them plus the points. But it certainly makes me interested in the over, because this is the type of game where I think you'll have a decent chance to see a fair few quick strike touchdowns.
All right, check out Teddy's picks this weekend, sportsmemo.com, coversexperts.com. You can follow him on Twitter, Teddy Covers. Teddy, it's always a pleasure, my man.
Morenci, have a great week. Best of luck, buddy.
Let's get it done. There's Teddy Covers with his quick break. Warren Sharp joins me next. We are live on the Fantasy Sports Network. I am Gabriel Morenci. All right, let's continue to break down tonight's NFL kickoff, the season opener. Thanks to Teddy Covers for joining us from Las Vegas, Nevada. Let's bring in Warren Sharp from sharpfootballanalysis.com. You should go to his website and get the season preview magazine information to help you throughout the season as well. Warren, kickoff is here. It's always a pleasure. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great. It's been a busy summer preparing for the season, but it's finally here. We finally get to break down matchups, and obviously the deeper into the season we go, the more the analytics are going to help us out, but certainly a lot of great action on tap for us this week.
All right, so let's jump right in here with the Super Bowl rematch. We've got the Panthers and the Broncos. Broncos getting 3 points on their home field. The total I saw right before I started the show was sitting at 41 right now, and you're a totals guy, Warren, so I'm going to pick your brain a little bit as far as totals are concerned. There's a big X factor here. We don't know with Trevor Siemian, right? What's Trevor Siemian going to bring to the table? But looking at all the props, and you look at the fantasy prices, people act as if though this game's going to be like a 6-3 football game, Ward. I think it could be a little bit higher scoring than people believe. What's your take on the Trevor Siemian and the Denver Bronco offense?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, ideally the game plan would be to run C.J. Anderson as much as possible, to work Trevor Siemian into the mix and let him feel comfortable in the system. But it remains to be seen, you know, how strong that pass rush from Carolina is going to be, what that secondary is going to end up looking like. We know that Gary Kubiak really does dial up some really good play action. If they do rely on the run game a little bit, that should free up the play action, take a couple of deep shots against that secondary that may be a little bit worse than what it was last season, particularly without Josh Norman back there. So, yeah, there's some opportunities, I think, in the passing game, but I would be surprised if they run up-tempo, and I would be surprised if they pass the ball as much as they did last year. So I do think the game plan for Denver is going to be pretty straightforward. We're going to rely on our defense, and we're going to try to ease Siemian into the game. The real question mark that I have is, how much does Carolina try to use a little bit of up-tempo that they've been working on this past preseason, a little bit last year, as well as, you know, how often are they going to pass the football with Benjamin working in the mix?
The Panthers were an over team last year. 12 of their games went over the number. Looking back at the Super Bowl award, you know, why wasn't the Panther offense more effective? It was because of what the Broncos were doing, and they can they do the same thing tonight? Or was it because Cam Newton just sort of had a bad game? I think one thing that caught my eye in that situation was the Carolina Panther wide receivers had a real problem. Like, Ted Ginn was really the only one that was ever getting open. And, you know, that was really sort of on gimmick plays and stuff. Now you got Kelvin Benjamin back. But, you know, what is there something different? Because we know the Carolina Panther offense is lethal. You know, the highest scoring offense in the National Football League. But they look very pedestrian. Cam Newton was very frustrated against the Denver Broncos. Was it something that they did, or was it sort of more that, you know, they weren't themselves that Sunday evening?
I think it's definitely a combination of both. You know, Denver's defense was really getting after Cam at the line of scrimmage and frustrating him. But you're absolutely right. Those receivers, they're not dominant receivers, and so they weren't making space for themselves. I think Greg Olsen could have a pretty big game. There are a number of key defenders that are missing from Denver that were on that Super Bowl winning team from last year. So I think that's going to help play into the Carolina Panthers abilities to produce a little bit more effectively. But, you know, the reality is for you know, the Carolina Panthers. Last year, anytime you're going up against Peyton Manning on the other side of the field, you're trying to stay on the field as much as possible, make Peyton Manning sit and get frustrated. You don't really have that issue right now with Trevor Siemian over there. You don't have to maintain this ridiculous time of possession and just try to work these long drives. The reality is, against really good defenses, especially on the road, you must strike with some big plays. It's unlikely that you're going to be able to convert three or four third downs on a single drive against the Denver Broncos. You have to get some chunk yardage in there some way, somehow. I think they need to be a little bit more creative and aggressive with some of the reverses, with getting Ginn involved like that. Remember, these defenders, they haven't been playing live action very much at all. So a lot of this stuff, this tackling in general, is going to be more difficult for them, you know, week one than it will be, you know, by week eight in the season.
A lot of talk about what the Denver Broncos don't have as far as, or we should say, a new quarterback. But for the most part, it's the same team. And they still have Demaryius Thomas. In, you know, the fantasy world, Thomas's stock has dropped quite a bit, similar with Emmanuel Sanders. But with that being stated, the Carolina Panthers don't have Josh Norman anymore either. You know, how do you feel about that, whether Norman was overrated? They seem to think that, you know, there's not going to be a drop-off. They're starting a rookie in his place. I don't think enough is being talked about that. I guess they're sort of lucky that it's against Siemian tonight in his first game. But not only that, they have a starting rookie back there. And, you know, they will have three rookies on the field during some of their nickel and dime packages. So it is an inexperienced secondary that Carolina is putting out there tonight.
No, exactly. And I think one of the interesting elements to this game is the location and what week it's being played. It's being played week one in Denver. And what that ends up meaning is that this defense for Carolina should be gassed late in the game if the Denver offense can stay on the field and maintain any type of consistency. They don't have to dominate time of possession, you know, 60-40 or something like that, but they have to do their fair part to keep that Carolina Panthers defense out on the field. There is a reason that over the first two games of the season when they play in Denver since '89, Denver has a home record of 27-3. It's because they get the altitude edge with teams that aren't used to playing at game speed for the full 60 minutes. And you throw them in there to Denver up at altitude, it's going to be a detriment, particularly to younger players, particularly to guys that don't have quite the experience level. Those guys, as you know, they get jacked up, really excited. They end up doing more work with their body than they probably should otherwise. If you're a vet, you're just, you know, settled down back there in the secondary. So I definitely think that fatigue potentially could play a factor in this game in the second half in particular.
Great point, Ward. You have the altitude, which is always a factor, but it's compounded by the fact that it's week one. So these guys' bodies they're not in midseason form yet. Their cardio isn't where it would normally be. And then you throw in the fact that even the starters probably only played a half of football, or maybe a couple of series. And then you compound that with the adrenaline of the Thursday nighter, and you're right, you know, it could kick in. I think we could see a lot of oxygen mass on the sidelines tonight for the Carolina Panthers. Right, quickly, Warren, time always flies by when we have you on. It's a tough game with a total. I think it's going to be higher scoring. I like a teaser, man. I like the Broncos teased up plus 10 over 34.
Yeah, I actually made a similar teaser to that for the Super Bowl itself. And so, you know, me personally, I'm probably staying off this game entirely. When the total was at 21 in the first half, going towards the under, I think that's when the defenses are probably going to be fresh. I think that's when they're going to be the most conservative with their play calling from both teams. But I think in the second half, ultimately, it'll open up against some more fatigued defenses, and I think you could see a few more points in the second half.
All right, let's blast through a couple of other totals. Is this one too obvious? Raiders, Saints, over 51?
It's definitely obvious when you consider what New Orleans brings to the table defensively, you know, who they tried to bring in the offseason, then some of the injuries that they've had through to some key players. The question mark I always have when it comes to Oakland, we think that they're improved defensively, but are they really? Also, we think that they're improved offensively, but how much do we trust Derek Carr on the road in week one? So there are definite question marks. I kind of know what I'm getting out of New Orleans. I think they're going to be efficient no matter what defense goes up against them. So even though people are saying Oakland's going to be more improved, I think Drew Brees and that offense are going to have some share of success. My concern only is what exactly does this Oakland Raiders offense look like? If they can produce against a terrible defense like the Saints, then this game should not have a problem exceeding that total. But obviously week one, that's a pretty high total when you consider these offenses are not that in sync with each other. Players are not playing very much, as you mentioned before, in the preseason. They're sitting out a lot of time in the preseason to stay healthy. So they're less in sync with one another than probably they have been in prior years.
Warren, the last seven times the Giants and the Cowboys have played, it's gone over the number. And you and I have talked about every one of these games because we've been doing this for more than 4 years now. And here it is. I looked it up. The lowest number that we had before this was 45. We got a 46 right now. Similar situation with Denver and Carolina. We got the number one offense in the NFL with Carolina. We got a total of only 41. Here we have the Giants and the Cowboys, a series, seven straight games that it's gone over the number. Now, there's all this hype around Ezekiel Elliott. There's all this hype around Dak Prescott. Yet here the total, sitting only at 46. What's your take on this one?
Yeah, I think this game is fascinating because most of these games end up being pretty tight, pretty close. Eli Manning has not looked that great in the preseason, but he typically doesn't look great in the preseason, at least last year with McAdoo, his offense coordinator at the time. He did not have a very good preseason then either. So I do feel like that the Giants offense is going to be pretty effective and efficient against this Dallas Cowboys defense. The main question mark I have is the other side of the ball. What are we going to get from Dak and what are we going to get from the offense of the Dallas Cowboys against this improved defense that looked very good in the preseason of the New York Giants? I wonder how from a tempo perspective, how slow they're going to go. I wonder how often they're going to allow Dak to run because, truthfully, I believe we both saw Dak in college. If you want the best out of your offense, you need to design some runs for Dak. And week one of the regular season, I'm not so sure that they're going to be incorporating enough of those to, you know, really maximize their efficiency, be able to throw off this defense of the New York Giants. So that's the only question mark that I really have in this one, but I certainly see many trips to the red zone from both teams with some big plays. It's just a matter of will they execute when they're down there.
Warren Sharp. For more expert analysis, go to sharpfootballanalysis.com. You can order the magazine for the season, but of course, weekly plays as well. Warren, it's always a pleasure, my man. Best of luck this weekend. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Enjoy the game tonight.
There's Warren Sharp with us. Right, we take a quick break. Jim Sands joins me next. We talk some DFS for tonight and week one of the NFL. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues, as does the countdown to kickoff and as does the countdown to my heart attack. You know, we're very excited for the start of the National Football League. Like I said off the top of the program, remember, you know, for coaches, the good old days when they just worried, did a player break curfew? Nowadays, like, oh, God, man, is the player going to, like, you know, is he going to stand on top of the U.S. flag or is he going to salute it this week? You know, we all have to worry about something. We're going to let you in behind the scenes, a little show business here. We're having a problem, man. My headset broke just as the show started. The one that we tried to replace it with wasn't working. And then the third one works, but it doesn't fit in my ear. As you can see, I have a bizarre-looking head. So, like, I've got, like, you know, I don't know. I need, like, a special customized earpiece or something like that. And it kept popping out, as you can see. So we did like the supermodels do. Like, you know, they tape breasts and their fat together and stuff. Clear tape, baby, clear tape. Let's rock and roll. Let's bring in Jim Saunas to talk. Let's bust some numbers, man. We're heating up here. Numberfire.com. Jim Saunas steps up and in. Jim, always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
I'm not too bad, Gabe. Long time no talk. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm going to ask you some DFS advice. I won't ask you if you have tape on your body anywhere.
There is. I can't say where, but there is. Believe me.
You know what? Like, I used to be in a band and... you know, we toured, and basically duct tape is the cause. Like, it fixes everything. Like, we'd have, like, holes in mufflers in the side of the van. No window. Duct tape it. Duct tape it.
There is a very popular book in my home state of Minnesota about 100 ways to use duct tape, and I think that undersells its utility by just saying there are only 100 ways.
No, you're exactly right. Yeah, you're in Minnesota. You guys are tough. Yeah. Exactly. Yep. You know about duct tape. My favorite line is, duct tape won't fix it. It's broke.
Right.
That's what it's like. No, we can't even. It's gone. All right, so let's jump in. As far as tonight's football game is concerned, people are very excited about this game. But from a DFS standpoint, it's not jumping off the page to people. People usually fall into the trap of, hey, what's the highest scoring game of the week going to be? And people really don't see this as this game. But without being stated, you know, Trevor Siemian's costing you pretty much in the same neighborhood as what a Dak Prescott is, and everybody's in love with Dak, but nobody wants a piece of Trevor. I'm telling you, nobody's going to own this guy. I look at this football game. I think the Broncos run the football a lot. If I'm playing one guy tonight, I like C.J. Anderson. What's your take on tonight's game from a DFS standpoint?
Yeah, I think that the reasoning behind if I were playing this game, I would probably fade it. I think that I would enter the Thursday contests on FanDuel, DraftKings, you know, whatever, just to not play the game. Let other people get their exposure to that game, and you can kind of benefit from that. But if I'm playing a player in this game, I understand why you like C.J. Anderson. I think that he's an interesting play as well. But I guess that my guy would probably be Demaryius Thomas, in all honesty. If you're looking at Trevor Siemian and what he did in college, and I know that his numbers are grotesque. They were bad. And, you know, eye test was the same thing. But the one thing that he did well at Northwestern was he could throw the deep ball pretty well. And I think that that does benefit Demaryius Thomas. That secondary for Carolina has no experience at all. They're literally starting rookies in the secondary. And that could play well for Demaryius Thomas. So I think if I'm playing this game and I want exposure to it, it would be in the form of Demaryius Thomas. But personally, I'd like to play the contest just to fade that specific game.
I agree with you, and we were just talking about that a couple of minutes ago as well. Not a lot of people, it seems like there's been so much focus and negativity around the Broncos for some reason, yet nobody's bringing up the fact that Josh Norman, one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL, isn't on this football team anymore, replaced by a rookie. And as you stated, they've got another two rookies going to be on the field in a nickel and dime packages. They're going to have three rookies back there in their secondary.
Yeah, and I think if you can see the Broncos move the ball well tonight through the air, if Trevor Siemian looks competent, like I'm not setting a high bar here, if he just looks okay, then I think that it could push the Panthers into a realm where we start using wide receivers against them pretty heavily. That front seven is still very good. Their defensive line is still stout. So you might be a bit nervous about a quarterback because of efficiency, but I do think that this is a situation where we could use wide receivers against them. So it may not be this week. You know, maybe you don't want to plunge in and use Demaryius Thomas, but if Trevor Siemian just looks kind of okay, if they can get a couple of big plays in there, then absolutely, I think it's time to pounce as soon as you can and start using opposing wide receivers going against this very young Carolina defense.
And you're right, Jim. I completely agree with him. I mean, if you wanted, I mean, if it was a Sunday night and there was other games going on and it wasn't the first game of the year, you go, hey, Kelvin Benjamin, $5,700. Why not? You know, I'll slide him in here. The problem with this is, and I agree with you, even with Demaryius Thomas, And you know, with a guy like C.J. Anderson, they both might be decent plays, but there are better plays this week. That's what it comes down to. And you're a patient man. You're a smart man. Now, one play that I know that we're both on the same side of here is Ryan Matthews. Ryan Matthews, heavily criticized all the time because the kid can't stay healthy. Well, you know what? When we're playing DFS, we only need him to stay healthy for one bloody afternoon, right, Jim? And when he's healthy, man, he's averaging like 5 yards a carry. He is a very good running back. I think Cleveland can throw the deep ball, but you know, Cleveland's going to have a hard time on the defensive side of the football. They can't stop the run. We got Carson Wentz in here. I love Ryan Matthews this week.
Yeah, and I think that, Gabe, you're a smart guy when it comes to Vegas. You know that this game is saying that the Eagles should be able to run the ball because they're favored, even though Carson Wentz is starting, and that just all lines up for Ryan Matthews. I mean, he's going to have the volume, and Cleveland's rush defense was really, really bad last year. And if you look at Matthews, I mean, the best way to, you know, look at his analytics from last year is to compare him head-to-head with DeMarco Murray, and Matthews was leaps and bounds beyond him. I mean, from an efficiency standpoint, Matthews was one of the better backs in the league. He was fourth in success rate among 44 backs with 100 carries. That's really good. And Cleveland, really bad. So I think that I am a bit concerned about Matthews only because I like to have my running backs on efficient teams with really good quarterbacks. And I kind of doubt that Carson Wentz will be that in week one. But I do think that the efficiency that he brings to the table, plus the inefficiencies of the Browns and the potential for Philadelphia to have a lead here in positive game script, that really outweighs it, especially at his low price. And I don't think he's getting enough talk this week, so potentially lower ownership than what he would generally merit.
All right, Jay, we got about 1 minute, literally and figuratively. Two running backs that you also have your eye on. A lot of people are hyping up large. Lamar Miller coming into the season against the Bears this weekend, and D'Angelo Williams, who I think is in a great spot Monday night in what should be a very high-scoring football game.
Yeah, and these are two guys I would use either in cash or in GPPs, just because I think they both have floors because of their roles in the receiving game, but they also have really high ceilings. If you look at that high-scoring game for Pittsburgh and Washington, that's great for Williams. And Lamar Miller, they're pretty big favorites over Chicago. Chicago's defense wasn't great last year, so I'm all about that life. Both these guys, I think, are in play. I think they're both great in any format, and I look forward to seeing, you know, what they can crack out there in week one.
Hey, keep up the great work over at numberfire.com. Great website. I enjoy checking it out. Now the football's here. I'll definitely be over there a lot more, too. Thanks for the time, Jim.
Thanks, Gabe. Appreciate it. Good luck in week one.
There's Jim Saunas with us. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with our plays of the day. I don't need tape. I don't need anything. You know what I need? I need a book to call. That's it. I got a bunch of picks coming up next. All right, the National Football League regular season is finally here. Let's do this thing. We got the Carolina Panthers and the Denver Broncos. I don't have to tell you that. I don't have to tell you that these two teams played in the Super Bowl last year. But I might have to tell you, as you might not know, this is the seventh time that there's been a Super Bowl rematch in week one the following season. For the record, you figure revenge would be preeminent? Wrong. The team that won the Super Bowl has actually won four of the six games. How have Super Bowl champions done in the first game of the season since the year 2000? How's 14-2 straight up sound? How's 10-4-2 against the spread sound? Give me the Denver Broncos plus 3 points on their home field. This game's going to be higher scoring than people think it is. Give me the Broncos tees up to 10, over 34. People are acting like this is a high school football game. Jonathan Stewart, 54 and a half yards, only rushing. Give me the over. Trevor Siemian, 214 and a half yards. It's not a MAC game. It's an NFL game. Trevor Siemian completes more than 17 and a half passes and goes over 214 and a half yards. C.J. Anderson is going to be the key to this football game. Once again, just like the Super Bowl, he'll be the difference maker. C.J. Anderson will pop one for 34 yards or so in the fourth quarter and lead the Denver Broncos to a victory. And we wrap it up with our best bet. It's back, baby. Long field goal, over 44 and a half, and at altitude with two great kickers, may the winners be yours.